We're talking about dogs. Talking about you and your dog. Struggling dogs. Talking about every kind of dog. Good dogs, bad dogs. Especially the sad dogs. Dog, 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 dog. Reward your dog.
Welcome to the Reward Your Dog podcast. I'm Jesse.
And I'm Verena.
We understand what it's like living with dogs who struggle.
And we are here to give you tools and ideas to help you and your dog live an awesome life.
Awesome. Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Reward Your Dog podcast.
Hello, hello.
So this is, I think, going to be episode 3. We'll see.
Sure enough. Finger pistols.
Finger pistols. How are you doing today?
I am doing pretty good. Yeah. Bit of a headache, but... I'm living life.
Wow. Okay. How is that affecting you?
How is the headache affecting me? It's okay. It was worse this morning. I think it's honestly because I'm working too much. I think I mentioned that in my last episode. And exactly how much is too much? Well, it's spring break over here. And what does that mean?
Doodles.
Doodles.
Doodles all the way down.
Not quite. But we have entirely too many boarding dogs at our house. There are 3 guest dogs with us right now in addition to our 2. And they're all lovely in their own right. But, 5 dogs is more than the sum of their parts, really.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
My mom used to say that dogs were logarithmic.
Oh, yeah.
That 1 dog is like 1 dog, 2 dogs is like 4 dogs, 3 dogs is like 9 dogs, et cetera.
Yeah, so we have 5 in the
house. Yeah, we're gonna need a graphing calculator if we keep this up.
Yeah.
Okay, so enough about dogs.
Well, I want to hear a little bit about how that's affecting you. You're done with dogs for the day, huh?
Yeah, we got to find another podcast to do. I'm doing good, actually. The dogs were a lot last night,
yeah.
As you know, because you
night.
Were right there next to me
when they,
during
term is
the barking.
Night.
But
I think you got up how many times?
4 times, I think. It's a little
wow.
hard to remember. Yeah.
I think I kicked you out of bed, too, because I couldn't do it. I was just too tired.
Yeah, if you're upset, I'm not sleeping anyway, so I might as well get out and deal with the dogs.
Oh, poor babe.
But we're all fine here, despite the headaches and the lacks of sleeps. Because we both had conveyor belt sushi.
Yeah.
Not that long ago. And now it is time to do our podcast about dogs. I think maybe it's time to get back into the dog topic.
Yeah, let's do it. Let's
So what is today's episode going to be about?
Oh, yeah. I should probably mention that. So today we're going to talk about the nervous system.
Nervous system.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
That's me.
Yeah.
I'm the nervous system.
I think we all have nervous systems, as I understand
yeah.
it. And I imagine you're going to explain to us how that's relevant, yeah?
Yeah, I mean, one cool thing about today's episode is that the nervous system in dogs and in humans is remarkably similar. So you might learn a thing or two about yourself as well.
Oh. Uh-huh. Okay, wow. We're going to have fun and we're going to learn some things along the way.
It's the plan.
But before we do that, you want to do the animal check-in?
Let's do it.
So, what do we got for the animal check-in? Who do you want to talk about today?
I want to talk about our poor beleaguered in-home pets, our 2 dogs and our cat, and how they're coping with the stress of having 3 guest dogs in.
Oh, yeah. 3 plus, because we've had a couple of other day adventurers. So, there have been times when we've had 7 dogs in the house.
I think 6 was the max.
Okay, yeah.
But
right.
still,
it's...
At some point, you're like,
let's put it that way.
Yeah, who knows? Yeah, Friday and Monday, we had 2 guest dogs, 1 guest dog each, and that was profound.
Yeah, it was a big experience. So how are our guys handling it?
I would say they're kind of tired of it.
Uh-huh.
They're putting up with it, but I'm making a point of taking both Iggy and Ozzy, my 2 dogs, out with me when I'm going places, and even if they're just hanging out in the car and snoozing, at least nobody's like jumping in on them or bugging them. Especially our older boy, Ozzy, can be a little snippy with guest dogs if they go on his nerves.
Well, and even Iggy, who's usually down to party 24/7, has sort of had it with one of these dogs who just doesn't have the social skills. And she's growing out of it somewhat to the point where she's like, you know what? Maybe I don't need you jumping on me still an hour later. You know? Knock it off.
So this morning, I had a session with a client, and then I wanted to head to the barn to see my horse. And you guys all know about my horse now. And I took them along and I knew they would just hang out in the car during the session. They would hang out while I worked with my horse. But then I took them for a nice long walk at the barn. They got to sniff a couple of ducks. They got to like see the horses and run around in the barn. And I think that really did them some good.
Yeah. So it's like you're meeting their needs.
That's the plan. And now they're currently snoozing on the sofa and the bed. So I feel like they're feeling a lot better about
it. Yeah. Just giving them a little space from the situation makes all the difference.
Yeah. How about the kitty cat? I feel like you've been hanging out with him much more than me.
I have. We had a nice snuggle session this morning while you were out with the dogs. Some of the energy like came down a little bit.
And I know. I mean, party time. It's a bit of a problem sometimes.
For you.
I'm the entertainment yeah. crew. Yeah, for sure.
But when you leave, sometimes they can relax a little bit. And mm-hmm. then the cat had a nice snuggle. He also got out the other day, which is, we yeah. keep him as an indoor kitty, but he's not totally convinced of that.
No, he's
and every
really
now and
not.
Then he makes a move and gets out in the back and patrols around for the night and then just comes back in the morning. So I think that probably filled his cup a little bit. And yeah. thankfully, you know, nothing bad came of it.
Yeah, I actually feel like a little bit of a genius, if I do say so myself, for creating a little spot for him in my closet in our bedroom. It's basically the far corner of the house. There's nothing behind it but the corner of the house. And he has got a little bed that's elevated on top of the kind of place where I keep my clothes.
Yeah, so no matter how chaotic things yeah, get, he's always got a place he can get away to.
It's pretty quiet because that's the place where my dog Ozzy sleeps for the most part and nobody messes with him because mm-hmm. he can be grumpy about it. And then the cat can see everything and everybody coming by. I think Parsi really likes that.
They do like to watch things, those mm-hmm. cats.
Yeah.
Yeah, and his other spot is a nice elevated shelf by a window. He can look out and see yeah. the world go by. Yeah. Get mad at the squirrels. And
high places for your cat yeah, and absolutely. Nothing behind them and several escape routes. That's where it's at.
Well, cool. I feel like we've touched base on the mm-hmm. animals. What do you got going this week? Any classes or anything like that?
Actually, my Urban Dog Reactivity online program is wrapping up tonight.
Oh, wow.
Got my final Zoom call. Everyone's been doing great. So it's basically a program that teaches the concepts of reactivity training and then supports people through their first exposure sessions.
Is that for like dog trainers, to teach dog trainers?
No, it's actually for clients. There's a lot of really great resources for dog trainers out there, and I'm not opposed to dog trainers taking this course because it's a good summary of my program.
So just an average person with a dog yeah. who maybe wants to go a little deeper, something like that?
Yeah, it's ideal for people who live in the city. So people that have to navigate triggers on walks very frequently, people that live in apartment buildings. Mm-hmm. Yeah, basically people that live in an environment where they kind of have to walk their dog, but they still don't want to have reactive outbursts all the time.
Right. And the students are thriving and enjoying the class and
They're
stuff?
Doing really well. The students are at different levels. It's a really small cohort because it's my first time running it. And they're working on different things, but they're really understanding the concepts and beginning to kind of run with them, which is exciting.
Oh, cool. So it's like a little one-room schoolhouse.
Yeah, with it is. Just online.
Yeah, okay. Maybe I've stretched the metaphor too far, so we should possibly move on. Back away slowly from that and talk about the topic of the week, which is the nervous system.
The nervous system. Let's do it.
So, nervous system.
Yeah.
What is that? That's a bunch of like jangly bits that run up and down our spine?
That's one way of putting it.
Plug into our brain?
Sure, yeah.
So. That's what I remember from biology.
Nice. Yeah, that's one way of thinking about it.
Okay. Seems like you have an alternate take you want to present?
Yeah, maybe a little bit. Okay. I mean, we don't need to know exactly like where the nervous system is or, you know, what it consists of. If you want to get fancy, I mean, there's
We're not
spinal...
starting at ganglia and...
No.
Okay.
No. Though if you want to go that route, I'm going to throw a link in the show notes for you to read up on that stuff, uh-huh. just in case maybe, you know, you're a vet student and you want to brush up on it.
Right.
You
yeah.
can. What I'm concerned with today is the sympathetic versus the parasympathetic nervous system.
Okay.
Does that ring a bell for you?
I've certainly heard those terms, but I think maybe we could all use a little refresher on what those things are.
Yeah. Yes. And
I know.
Sure.
I just want to know if you know.
Thanks. I still to this day, but less so now, tend to get confused which one is sympathetic and which one is parasympathetic.
Uh-huh.
But one of my wonderful clients the other day gave me this amazing like mnemonic device. Namely, parasympathetic is like parachute, and the point of a parachute is to slow you down. Isn't that amazing? So in short, the parasympathetic nervous system is for the slow things. Resting, digesting, feeding, and breathing. Well, breathing can be more furious, I suppose, but it's
sometimes
basically...
you're playing a long game.
Well, what that means is that you have to be in a certain state of physical relaxation to be able to access that.
Gotcha. You can't get it on when you're being chased by a tiger.
Yeah, that wouldn't be practical. whereas the sympathetic nervous system is responsible for the fight or flight response. Other examples of that are freeze, fawn, and fidget. Do you know all of those?
I know all those words, and I think I can put together what you mean by all of those in the context of dogs, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, fight is easy.
Flight
is easy, yeah. So fight would be growling, barking, lunging, snapping. Flight would be running away, hiding. Fawn,
well, I mean, a lot of times you'll see those dogs that, and this is especially true in like puppies or less confident dogs.
Young Goldens.
When they encounter something that's like maybe a little intimidating or something they don't know, somebody especially, I mean, basically always, their first instinct is to sort of throw themselves at your feet and start licking you and rolling on their backs just trying to win your approval and present themselves as the nicest, sweetest, least threatening animal they possibly can.
Don't kill me, I'm so cute.
Yeah, don't kill me, I'm so cute, which, you know, is cute, but is also pretty annoying sometimes and doesn't represent them at their best.
No, it doesn't mean they're happy, for sure. And then fidget.
I imagine fidget is sort of obsessive behaviors, maybe at the outside extreme.
Yeah. Jerky movements.
Jerky movements are like, you know, chewing or spinning in a circle or these kinds of things that dogs sometimes do when they just don't know what to do with themselves.
Yeah. Just like with us, you know, we're like tapping our foot or something
like that. Yeah,
that's
a
fidget behavior. And then freeze is, of course, when we go into that state of just like being really still, our muscles super tense. Mm-hmm. And often freeze comes right before the fight or flight. Or it might come before we shut down and like faint.
Yeah.
That's like a super extreme example of like...
Or just like disassociate, right? Sometimes you'll get dogs who don't like necessarily faint or run, but you can just tell they're shut down.
Yeah. And that's... you know, we're not gonna go that deep in that today, but there's a, you know, once you're in a chronic stress situation, we'll talk about stress levels in a future episode, that can happen.
Right.
But yeah, so basically those are the two kinds of nervous system we have. So the parasympathetic nervous system means we're basically in a good and a regulated place. Everything is functioning normally. And the sympathetic nervous system means that we are ramping up in terms of our stress response.
So, I mean, obviously we need to have that sympathetic nervous system on tap for emergencies.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But it seems to me like, is it fair to say that a healthy dog or any creature for that matter is one that that spends most of their time in the parasympathetic state and only, you know, has to call on that sympathetic nervous system occasionally and in appropriate situations?
I mean, it's not a switch, right? We're not flipping from one to the other. It's a dial, right? And no stress hormones, doing nothing that gets our heart pumping or for the dogs can be kind of boring.
Right.
I mean, even chasing a ball can get you into, you know, that prey chasey thing, which elevates your nervous system. And some dogs really love it. And I'm not against ball chasing. And when you're keeping it, you know, under control somewhat, compulsive behaviors are another story altogether. But so it's very normal for the nervous system to bounce back and forth between those. But we'll talk a little bit about the states of the nervous system shortly. We don't want a dog constantly living in their sympathetic nervous system.
Sure. Yeah, that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. And what we really want is a dog that says, "Ooh, that was a little scary," but they can shake it off and 5-10 minutes later, they're normal. They're fine, right? If a dog takes 2 to 3 days to recover and move back into that parasympathetic nervous system, then we have a dog that's having a hard time.
Right.
Right. So, We know this from our dog after post-blood draw, the first blood draw he did.
Yeah, three days. So, I mean, what you want is maybe a dog that'll be a little alarmed at an alarming situation,
yeah,
but isn't going to have their day ruined by it.
Precisely. So it's not a bad thing to bounce into the sympathetic nervous system every once in a while. Mm-hmm. But yeah, we don't want the dog to live there.
Right.
But again, the body is made to go back and forth between these two states.
Right. So it's a physiological thing at some level, whether or not you can do that sort of regulation we just described of like coming back down.
I like what you're saying about that being kind of a physiological function, because it's also called the autonomous nervous system. So that means humans and dogs are not in control of mm-hmm. those things. They just happen.
Right, like digesting.
Digesting, breathing, right? It would be impractical if we had to think about every bite we take or every breath.
Right.
Yeah, so the parasympathetic nervous system regulates your heartbeat and keeps it slow. It keeps you salivating. It makes sure that your pupils are at a normal size. It makes sure that your stomach can do its thing.
Mm-hmm.
It makes sure that you can, you know, your digestive functions are good. It makes sure that you're not peeing yourself. And the same is true for dogs. And it also keeps your airways kind of regulated so that you're not panting heavily when mm-hmm. your dog isn't.
So if you, and obviously, like, you need to do those things. You need to breathe normally. You need to mm-hmm. digest your food.
Yeah.
So if you're spending too much time outside of that parasympathetic state, you're going to start having health consequences, right?
Yeah, we'll talk about that more in the episode on stress. But yeah, okay. Chronic stress is bad.
Yeah.
There's tons of studies, and that is absolutely true. So in the sympathetic nervous system, the pupils will dilate,
right?
Because we need to see more to run away. The dog does too. The dog isn't going to salivate as much. The heartbeat's going to come up. We're going to relax those airways so we can breathe in a lot of air to run away really fast, right? The stomach is not going to work. I heard, so Michael Shikashio, who is actually a good person to follow, he has a podcast called The Bitey End of the Dog. It's really great. Always says, I wouldn't want to eat a cupcake if I was falling out of an airplane, right? Think about it that way, right?
Yeah.
If you're like running away from a tiger, you're probably not thinking about eating a carrot or whatever else you want to eat. I like carrot and hummus. I don't know about you, but I think that's tasty. Same with digestion. The digestion's going to shut down, but you may pee yourself because the bladder is going to relax. And obviously, we're going to have tons of stress hormones entering the bloodstream.
Mm-hmm.
So those are kind of those physiological functions that we're talking about. And that is not something that both dogs or humans can control. So it's not like we're like, okay, let's breathe really fast. Okay, let's, you know, let's make sure that we're like our pupils like really let in light. That just happens because there are stress hormones coming into the blood.
Right.
Another thing that I didn't mention that I do want to mention real quick is basically when we're preparing for fight or flight, fine motor control goes out the window.
Okay.
Right? So we're not going to like be, I mean, I'm a nerd, right? So I'm not going to be painting my mini figurines for my gaming things at this time. I'm going to be thinking about running away, right? So all that fine motor control can go out the window.
So a couple of points on that. First of all, you've been living here with me for like 15 years, and I've never seen you paint a minifig in that entire time.
That is correct.
So you're hearkening back to the days of bygone youth when you suggest that, I think.
I never did paint one, but I was thinking about an activity that would really take a lot of focus and uh-huh. fine motor control.
Okay, well, I'll raise my second point. This is more of a dog thing, but taking a treat out of your hand with your mouth.
Very good, yeah.
Is a really good example mm-hmm. of when the dog gets too excited, they also get chompy.
Yes, 100%. And there are different kinds of dogs. Some dogs will then no longer want to eat.
Mm-hmm.
And some dogs will chomp your hand off as they're taking the treat. But that would be an example of that fine motor control going out the window.
Right.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why you sometimes see fights break out when the dog elevates too high while playing with another dog.
Are you saying because that elevation causes them to then do things that are rude because they're a little too, like, out of control?
It could go that
way. So they don't mean to start a fight, but they're, like, you know, maybe biting inappropriately mm-hmm. or crashing into the other dog just because they're jacked up, not because they're trying to start something.
Yeah, I've been actually thrown by dogs that were too high up that ladder of the nervous system and that then crashed into me because they couldn't see me anymore because they had tunnel vision.
Yeah.
And I've been like thrown.
Dogs that are running down a trail sometimes will take you out.
Yeah.
Just because they're having such a great time.
Yeah, and that is an example of a dog that is too high up the stress ladder.
Yeah.
And, you know, we can get very complicated here, but there's not just unhappy stress, there's happy stress too,
right?
And we can go too far on that too. And we're not talking about that too much today. But I think we've kind of covered the parasympathetic versus sympathetic nervous system.
Mm-hmm. And we started to talk about what dogs are able to do.
Yeah.
In their various modes, right?
Yeah, and I actually think it would be helpful if we could conceptualize that with just a very simple diagram almost.
Okay.
I want to think about the dog's nervous system as a traffic light.
Say more about that.
Yeah, I will. So basically, dogs can be in the green, yellow, or red zone.
Okay.
Green light means go, right? So the green zone is where we're able to function normally, do all of our normal things. And the same is true for our dogs. So in the green zone, a dog will do normal dog things like sniff, chew, sleep, mosey around, even run around a little bit. So it doesn't mean they're, you know, always completely relaxed, but they're functioning normally. They're bouncing back between running and walking and sniffing.
So, I mean, this is a spectrum between green to red, I presume, is where we're going to end up.
Yeah.
And so green doesn't just include the lowest possible engagement, but everything within a healthy spectrum of relaxed engagement. Is that a good way of saying it?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm kind of shining on something called the blue state, which is sometimes like a depressed kind of shutdown state. It depends on, you know, it's a metaphor to some degree, obviously. So depends on who you ask. Blue can also mean sleeping or deep relaxation. So, you know, I'm trying to give you the three ones that are going to be the most impactful for understanding your dog and dog training.
Okay, yeah, sorry. I didn't mean to trip you up. Keep going.
No, you're good,
what about yellow?
Yeah. So the yellow zone is when your dog starts getting to a point where the stress hormones are coming into the body, but they are not yet completely dysfunctional.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, would that be like maybe alert?
Yeah.
Or maybe even nervous, possibly excited.
Yeah,
but all of those things sort of under a threshold of...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they are what we, some people would call that at threshold.
Mm-hmm.
So they're right before they dip into fight or flight. It's kind of the point of no return, almost, right? Where they're like, ooh, I see something that either very much excites me, wakes my prey drive, or makes me a little uncomfortable, right? Whoa. Like, for example, me and spiders.
Uh-huh.
I can get into the yellow zone by seeing a spider. For our dog Ozymandias, that would be seeing a human.
Right.
In certain ways. I mean, we've worked on him. We've worked on regulating his nervous systems around humans. But there are certain things that say we're on a walk and a human comes around the corner and comes towards us. That would lead him to go into yellow pretty much right away.
For sure.
Just like humans approaching frontally is one of his triggers, right? And we would see him really hone in on that person. And he's the kind of dog who will not eat food in those situations. These days, he kind of will because I've trained it, eating food as a behavior, simply because eating can help bring that nervous system down.
Yeah, although sometimes it seems like he's taking that food to just sort of like...
Get me off his back.
Yeah, just right. Like, I know I'm supposed to eat this now. This is the way I get your hand out of my face.
A little bit, but I know that just the act of eating can kind of help bring things down a little bit.
Gives him something to do with some of that energy.
Yeah, we'll definitely talk a little bit about how to bring the nervous system down in a few moments anyway. But it's basically that point where it could go either way. Maybe the dog is like, okay, yeah, I see that, but I can, you know, move away or handle that and then I'll be fine.
Mm-hmm.
Or they're escalating further into the red zone.
Right, which would either maybe be charging or maybe be running.
Mm-hmm. And red zone behaviors is what we usually lump under reactivity behaviors.
Uh-huh.
So you can probably imagine what that looks like, right?
Right. As I said, that could be like charging. It could, at the, you know, in extreme examples, it could include like biting.
Yeah.
or, you know, like barking and lunging. Mm-hmm. It could also be sort of cringing or, you know, trying to run away, you know, at the end of the leash, head in the opposite direction. And there could also be some, as you say, like fawning type behaviors mm-hmm. where they just sort of fall down and do everything they can to convince you not to kill them or eat them or whatever.
Roll around. And that's where you see some of that, what we call submissive peeing, maybe too.
Right, and some of that stuff can be misidentified as like cute or friendly.
Yeah, 100%.
Even though the dog is really struggling and
it's
having a
very
bad time.
Dysregulated state. Yeah, it's sad, actually. Mm-hmm. And often with those dogs, if that happens around humans, if we teach them that humans don't say hi to them all the time, and we teach them a structure, how to say hi and properly greet, that goes away because they're like, ooh, finally, thank goodness, this is predictable.
Yeah, right.
I don't have to act this way anymore. So even though we're talking about how this is a state of the nervous system, we don't necessarily have control over that, we can still help a dog regulate around their triggers. So it's not hopeless, and we'll talk about that in a future episode too. But basically, this is not something that the dog chooses to do, right? Last week, we talked a lot about why is my dog reactive?
Right.
And sometimes it's like people are like, oh, my dog is reactive because they're a jerk or because they're, you know, because I messed something up. But think about it as your dog is not making a conscious choice. This is not frontal lobe activity. Mm-hmm. We're choosing things. This is happening to your dog. This is very much an unthinking state.
Yeah, this is... It goes a little bit to the question of free will, to get philosophical on you here, mm-hmm, but
I love it.
I think we have to disabuse ourselves of the idea that any, you know, honestly, I'll go so far as to say like any of us are doing anything in a sort of like deciding to do it kind of way.
Wow.
But, you know, why don't we set that to one side for the moment and just consider dogs.
Sure.
Who, you know, sometimes we say like, oh, that dog made a good choice in that situation. Mm. That's probably not the best language to use because they're not really making choices. They are reacting to stimulus.
Yes and no. It depends a little bit on whether this dog has learned skills.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can help a dog reprogram behavioral
responses.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
And that's kind of what I'm saying is that we can adjust the reaction the dog is likely to make by teaching them those skills and by giving them a different feeling about a situation. But in that moment, when that situation arises, the response to the situation is almost already programmed, right?
Oh, yeah, it's 100% true. And I'm, you know, I just was kind of pushing back on you because, you know, that this is a conversation. But 100%. I mean, I don't like language like, oh, what a good choice, or wow, that was a poor choice, or wow, this dog is so rude, or something like, my dog is just a jerk. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, you can put swear words here if you want, but we're a clean podcast, right?
That's what we told Apple.
Yeah, so far so good. but at the same time, that dog is reacting.
Right.
And it's the same for you as a human, right? If your nervous system is over a certain point, if you shout at somebody or if you, you know, like try to hide in a corner, like that could be a physiological response too.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure we've all had like emotional reactions that we didn't feel in control of.
Yeah.
Or have done things that we, in, you know, upon reflection, wouldn't have necessarily chosen to do,
goodness.
But we had no option, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
It's not our fault.
Oh, we went into autopilot.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So in terms of how that relates to learning, learning can happen really well in the green zone.
Mm-hmm.
That's where the dog has their full frontal lobe available to them. They're going to, dogs can form associations and learn in whatever state. But they may not be learning the thing that we want them to learn, right?
Right.
That doesn't mean that when your dog escalates further into yellow or red, they can't learn, but they may be just learning that something is scary,
mm-hmm.
or that aggression works or things like that that we
right.
may not really want them to learn.
So you're saying that in the green zone, we have much better control over what the lessons a dog is learning? Are?
Yeah, I like that, actually.
I got caught up in my prepositions there.
You did great.
Okay.
um, Well handled, Jesse.
Thank you.
Exactly. So we can basically help our dog create positive associations mm-hmm. when they're in the green zone.
Right, because there's only positive associations going on. In the
not
yellow zone.
Not necessarily, well, but I think for the purpose of simplicity, yes.
Okay. Yeah. You take my meaning. In the yellow zone, they could be, you know, it could be the treat that they're remembering, or it could be the scary thing that they're remembering.
It depends on how escalated we are.
In a green zone, like, there is no scary thing. We're not scared yet. So mm-hmm. we're more interested in the treat and the lessons it has to teach us, for example.
Yeah, if we're like early in yellow, the dog may go, oh, okay, I figured it out. Mm-hmm. It's not that bad, right? And then they learned that something isn't scary. And that's what we would actually refer to as desensitization or habituation, depending on how it happens. We don't want to get too technical right now. But basically, for the most part, when the dog goes over a threshold, they either learn they can make something go away with a reactive outburst. For example, by snapping at somebody or mm-hmm. barking at somebody, or they can learn that something is really, really scary because it scared them.
Yeah, right.
Right.
That could be self-reinforcing.
Mm-hmm. And aggression itself, it's a red zone behavior, but it feels good and it can be really reinforcing. It's complicated. Aggression is a really complicated behavior. It's a little bit beyond the scope of what we're doing. But a lot of the time the dog is like, wow, this was really scary, but I made it go away by snapping at it. I'm going to keep doing that, right? Mm-hmm. So that's not something we necessarily want our dog to learn.
Right.
So I'm not saying that in the red zone the dog can't learn, but they may be learning things that we don't like.
There's a whole thing with like humans and fighting.
Yeah.
And I suppose this may include fist fighting, but I mean just like yelling and screaming that has an endorphin release associated
yes.
with it.
Yep.
And so partly we learn like, oh, when I get under stress, what I do is I lash out and that makes me feel better.
Yep.
Even though that's not something that not a lesson we would choose to learn,
mm-hmm.
but it's the lesson our nervous system teaches us sometimes.
It's a super sucky coping strategy, and I've been there, so I can, you know that. We've been married for many years, right? Sometimes I go over a threshold, I shout and I yell, and then I feel fine because I just got my endorphin release, and you don't feel fine because you didn't, and this sucked for you, right?
Yeah.
So, there's an interplay of people. I hope that wasn't too personal.
That's fine.
you guys, marriage is hard.
You're the one who's shouting uncontrollably in this scenario, so I'm good with it.
I'm growing up now that I'm in
my 40s.
Anyway,
the point is, like, a dog can also do a thing that we're not stoked to see them do, but they can get a positive association from it.
Yeah. Yeah. And for things we don't, that are maybe not super safe.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. But basically, as you are working with your dog, especially a reactive dog, it's really important to keep your dog in the green zone as much as possible, especially if you're trying to convince them that something isn't something they should be reacting at, right? You don't need to have this trigger you. And that can be tricky if your dog is really struggling with mm-hmm. certain things. So I want to just finish this part up with a few tips.
Yeah.
So the three big relaxers, this is again a simplification, for dogs are, depending on the dog, of course, everyone's an individual, but just as a blanket statement, most dogs find sniffing, licking, and chewing relaxing. Right. So let's say your dog had an outburst at another dog, or they just got a little bit fidgety or a little bit nervous. Pulling over to the side, hopping into a quiet area, and then giving them a good sniff, maybe throwing some treats down in that grass so that they can eat them up, is a really good way to help them come back down.
Mm-hmm.
Especially if you're on a walk and you're flying a dog kite on a leash all of a sudden.
One thing that we do sometimes when we want to encourage our dogs to sniff
mm-hmm.
is we'll just like go down to a piece of grass or the base of a tree or something, and with one hand, almost like a hand puppet, just sort of be like, sniff down, you know, like you give them the sort of indication that you're sniffing an area.
Yeah.
And we've all seen, like, if one dog starts sniffing something, the other dogs are going to go to check out what that is. And that can be a really easy way to get a dog who's maybe a little distracted
mm-hmm.
or obsessing about something to instead take a few seconds and just sniff the grass,
mm-hmm.
and that very much will bring down their, energy level and
yes,
and help them to relax.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Licking and chewing are more things that are going to be practical, not on walks, but when you are back home or when you're in the car. But let's say you're working with your dog and something that's a bit stressful for them, give them breaks in the car where you bring your frozen Kong or your bully stick or whatever other chewing.
Can I share my recent innovation in the field of licking and chewing?
Yeah, let me finish the sentence.
Okay, go ahead.
Well, you can bring that for them and then give that for them to lick or chew as they're taking a little bit of a break.
Yeah.
All right, Jesse, innovation.
Okay, so we do a lot of like frozen Kongs and mm-hmm. lick mats and stuff like that. And oftentimes what we'll do is we'll take, for example, some just canned wet food and spread it over a lick mat and then freeze that. And then the dog can lick away at that, and that's great. And we just did that this afternoon, so I'm still a big fan of that behavior.
Yeah.
But we've had some puppies that can just, like, power through those things. And it's, you know, a lot of calories to give somebody 10 of those in a day. But there are dogs that will work pretty hard on a lick situation, even if it's not super rewarding.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I found is if you take one of those puzzle feeders, you know, if you can picture it, that's like, it's almost like a dog bowl with projections and stuff inside it. So they have to kind of lick in and around it.
Yeah. If you want to Google it, it's called a maze feeder.
A maze feeder. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Thank you. I just took a little bit of wet food and then I filled it up with water.
Ooh.
Sort of like mix that up into a soup. And it's only like a spoonful of wet food, but it makes dog food flavored water.
Yep.
Sprinkle in a little bit of kibble, you know, for crunchy, interesting bites.
Mm-hmm.
Freeze that whole Megilla, and it will keep a dog licking for a long, long time. It's not a bunch of calories.
Yeah.
All you're really doing is giving them a little bit of food and a bunch of water, which is generally good for them.
Yeah, I love that. Like something like chicken broth or beef broth mm-hmm. are great too for the dogs that need to save up on calories.
Unsalted, probably.
Yeah, ideally. Yeah. I mean, a lot of those are low sodium, but it's better not to overdo it on the sodium front for sure. Those are good things. We'll probably talk about food and other types of enrichment in future episodes, but this would fall under...
I should save that for a quick tip, but okay.
I think that's really great though. besides those big three, your dog may also find a lot of comfort in gentle touch and kind of like a gentle, almost massage-like touch. Again, something to Google would be T-touch, like the letter T and then touch. That is a modality that uses calming touch. And you can actually teach your dog to breathe with you. And in our shout-out, we'll talk about the person who came up with that protocol.
Okay.
So.
Well, I'm intrigued about this breathing business. Do you want
really
to
cool.
go into it for a sec?
Sure, why not? So we will talk a little bit about training mechanics later. I just want to introduce you to a quick term right now, which is capture behavior. So capturing behavior is when you are using a marker. A marker could be a clicker or a word like yes, that tells your dog that you like what they just did.
Okay.
So you need to have that to teach your dog what you're wanting. But basically, with a marker, you can capture a behavior that a dog is doing, that they're naturally doing. It's very similar to our first episode when we talked about that see, mark, and reward training, the SMART times 50.
Yeah.
I said, oh, you see your dog lie down? Yes, and treat.
Right.
That's kind of what I'm talking about with capturing behavior. So your dogs will breathe throughout the day pretty regularly.
One hopes.
And of course, just like us, dogs can mouth breathe and they can nose breathe. And mouth breathing, just like with us, is less, you know, it elevates the nervous system. If we're consistently mouth breathing, we have more stress hormones floating around.
Panting.
It's the same for dogs. So we could watch them and see them take a breath in through their nose. See the little adorable nose wiggle. Mm-hmm. And we could say yes or click our clicker at those times. And then we could give them a treat. And over time, your dog, if they're used to a learning system like that, they are going to be like, ooh, every time I take a breath in through my nose, my human marks me and gives me a treat.
Yeah.
So I should start to offer that. And once they're figuring that out, you could even put that on a cue. You could tell them to breathe, or my cue is often doing a deep breath in together.
Uh-huh.
It's very calming. It's a really great thing to teach your dog to breathe with you.
Yeah.
because it teaches your dog to regulate.
Yeah, that's cool.
It's super cool. I love it. So our shout out of the week is Dr. Karen Overall. Dr. Karen Overall is a board certified veterinary behaviorist. So she is somebody who's not just a behavior consultant like myself, but she would be called a behaviorist.
Okay.
And that is a person who, ironically, deals less with actual behavior training and more with assessing the dog as a whole being for health and mental health issues. So those are the psychiatrists of the dog world,
okay,
if you will.
As opposed to the therapists of the dog world?
As opposed to the therapists of the dog world.
Right.
It's a pretty good way to put it, yeah. And Dr. Overall is also, in addition to being an excellent board-certified vet behaviorist, a great trainer. And she has developed several protocols that I believe almost everybody knows who has a reactive dog. One is the take a breath protocol that I just talked you through for the quick tip. And the other is the protocol for relaxation,
right,
which is kind of develop an extended down stay on a mat or a sit stay that then goes into, you know, can my dog relax on a mat while I am knocking on the door? Can my dog relax on the mat while I step outside the room and stay there for 30 seconds, et cetera, et cetera. So it's one of those flagship ship protocols that everyone has probably heard of.
Yeah.
And if not, check it out, because Dr. Overall is very generous and makes that available through her website. And we'll link the website in our, what's it called? Show notes.
Show notes, yeah. We do this protocol pretty often with dogs. And dogs that just cannot leave your side for a second and can't relax for a moment can really make significant progress really quickly with this protocol.
They can. I also find that working dogs don't do as well with it. They are probably better off learning the breathing technique from her.
Yeah.
Because they're just like, oh my God, I'm doing this intense downstay while my human's doing stuff.
Right.
But I'm watching them really hard and I'm paying attention. So
yeah, just staying in one place doesn't necessarily mean relaxing.
No, but for a lot of dogs that really, you know, they just get bored after a while. They're like, my human is doing all this random stuff and I can't really predict when they're going to come back, but there's going to be treat in it for me. And then they just start putting their head down because they're like, okay, whatever.
Yeah, I'll just wait for the treat and chill.
It depends a little bit on how regulated or dysregulated your dog is, speaking of nervous system. But nevertheless, two really seminal, amazing protocols. And if you look at the link that I'm putting in the show notes, you can also kind of read a lot of stuff about her approach to behavioral training, which is great.
Yeah, cool. All right. I'm feeling pretty good about this episode. You want to put it in the can?
Let's do it. So thanks so much for listening to the Reward Your Dog podcast. If you like the show, you know what to do. We would love it if you could reward us by reviewing, liking, and of course, subscribing.
Yeah. And feedback, suggestions, questions, all that business. Again, I want to do a letter segment, so send us your questions. Send those to Verena, that's V-E-R-E-N-A, at rewardyourdogtraining.com, spelled like it sounds.
Yep. Spell just like it sounds. And I, on our website, I'm actually going to create a little form to put in questions too, which be even easier. So we'll link that in the show notes too.
That would mean people should go to your website?
Yep, they sure should. To also to check out any offerings that I have that they might benefit from, which is at www.rewardyourdogtraining.com. Do you want to tell us about the socials?
Sure. Yeah, what do we got? We got the TikTok, which is at Reward Your Dog Training.
I have to say TikTok is kind of a mystery to me because I'm like old, but I mean, I'm not old, but I'm in my 40s, so.
I'm sure there's something after TikTok that people who do TikTok are basically boomers at this point.
Huh. Yeah. Oh my God, that's depressing.
And for those of you who are pre-TikTok, we've got Instagram, at Reward Your Dog. And I bet there's a Facebook too, right?
Yeah, it's at rewardyourdogtraining.com.
No, that's because it's Facebook.
Just facebook.com / rewardyourdogtraining. Very simple. Anyway, this is getting embarrassing. We're showing our age. Jesse, what socials do you do?
I do Facebook, but it sucks. And I don't actually enjoy spending much time there anymore.
Not much of a Snapchat person?
No.
I'm just kidding. I feel like, does anyone still do Snapchat? Well, we don't have one.
I'm going to go check my AOL online after this.
You used to have a teleport.
I used my BB Edit for a while there too.
Well, my goodness. Well, we're ancient.
Do some bulletin boards, guys.
We're ancient. I didn't grow up with a cell phone. I got a cell phone when I was 17.
I also didn't grow up with a cell phone.
Well, you're also old. So. Yeah.
Back in my day, we had two coconut halves and a piece of string.
Well, let's bring this back to the podcast. Thanks so much for being here. Give your dog a cookie from us.
Yeah, and give yourself a cookie too. Bye, folks.
Bye. Thank you.
We're talking about dogs. Talking about you and your dog. Struggling dogs. Talking about